staff, members of the public. Okay, you have in front of you the agenda, and I just wanted to make mention, because we have one of the counselors late, we may have to delay a couple of items once we get started. As far as the minutes, approved by consensus. If you haven't seen them, we'll give you a few minutes. Any questions on the minutes? We ready to move on from the minutes?
Great.
Okay, great. No business arising from the minutes. We'll go to superintendent reports. Turn it over to Mr. McTimony.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. The first report we have is monitoring report ASEWER2, Academic Excellence. So it's on your portal. I have it up on the screen. We report on this 2 times a year. And appreciate the support of Diane Kay and Gina Dunnett in the preparation of this report. So this this is the report that outlines our expectations for academic excellence in our district. You can see here that we have created and actively monitor a district improvement plan that's available publicly online and also on your DEC portal. Our Director of Curriculum and Instruction provides leadership in the area of professional learning, so PD, and there's a document attached here as an appendix that outlines our commitment to priorities within this policy. We have a very good team of subject coordinators and educational leads that are very important as we work to constantly improving our professional skills. It's noted that there's been a big investment in recent years on the implementation of a new student database system called PowerSchool, as well as new report cards for grades K to 8. Many opportunities, events, and partnerships occur in Anglophone West that extend the learning opportunities for students and promote critical thinking skills, which is important with respect to this policy. And you can see a variety of different examples, everything from the Turning Point essays and the Entrepreneurial Adventures program. Those are both learning partnership programs to distance learning and independent studies and a variety of different festivals and fairs and contests and forums. We have our data organized and shared through a variety of different sources. The data helps us as we develop our district improvement plan. Data not only on provincial achievement, but also on feedback from students, whether it's grade 12 exit surveys, or tell them from me data, or surveys in the areas of public health, things like tobacco and alcohol use, nutrition, those categories. We get a lot of data that comes from feedback through a variety of different surveys. And of course, at the school level, the school improvement plans and positive learning environment plans are an integral part of school leadership and help support the movement of schools forward. As you know, we have 70 schools and each have the responsibility to create and actively maintain and monitor a school improvement plan and positive learning environment plan. We'll continue to do work in this area in improvement planning. And we'll continue to work with the data. One of the things that I often say, that one of the most valuable positions that came out of amalgamation 4 years ago is the creation of a data and accountability supervisor. And she's been instrumental helping keeping us organized with respect to data and pulling from the information that we have to help inform our plans for moving the district forward. So there are a few appendices. There's the director of curriculum summary, as well as a sample of some monthly math tips, and appendix C is a neat little article that shows critical thinking and extension beyond the classroom, where we have a set of twins who are students in our schools at Fredericton High, who are on their way to the Skills Canada national competition that's being hosted in Moncton this June. So I don't think that I'll read through everything, but you can see categories here under professional learning. And then when we look at our curricular areas such as literacy, French second language, numeracy, science. So within each of these categories are just descriptions of how we're focused on student learning and trying to meet the needs of all of our students. Some challenging opportunities that would fall under the umbrella of critical thinking and extending student learning. So just when you have a chance, you can sift through these and see some of the great things that are going on in our school district. Not always things that get reported about publicly or shared, but are certainly meaningful to our students. I'll show you the picture of our two boys who are off to the Nationals. Their Ken and Zach Dickinson, and their area of expertise is in the area of media studies. So that's my report, ER2. Any questions or anything you'd like me to look at a little more deeply?
Where are we, David, with the offering of Level 1 courses this time, either next year or in the future, for Level 1 courses?
So in our high schools, you would mostly see Level 1 courses in high school settings where the enrollment is mm-hmm. higher. And that's simply because to have a Level 1 section, there's a requirement for students to be, you know, and have enough students to run the class. So what happens each and every year in our high school settings, the high schools build a timetable based on student requests. So they may put out a course selection, a course calendar, where the grade 10 and 11 students going into 11 and 12 will pick out what they're interested in. And if there's enough interest in a level one course, whether it's in math or in English language arts or in history or in science, if there's enough interest that they can run a section within the FTE that they've received, then many times they will. Sometimes if only six or seven kids would sign up for it or express an interest in taking it, then that's not big enough to run the class.
Would you look for 15 or more?
15 or more level one courses throughout our district?
No, to do a course, would you need to...
Yeah, I can remember as a principal at Oromocto High School, we sort of looked at 18 to 20 as a magic number. But each school is different, and they need to take into account the balance of what they have for FTE and make decisions on what they can offer based on that. They get their FTE, of course, based on student enrollment.
Yep, thank you.
So how much will this change with the 10-year ed plan when that comes out?
I expect the 10-year ed plan will focus on some priorities.
Yeah.
And we'll have to look at the 10-year plan and put our district improvement plan side by side with our new provincial plan. And I expect there will be some alignment. And I mean, we have focuses on literacy and numeracy and leadership. I'm kind of expecting that kind of those kind of categories to come out in a 10-year plan, but maybe there are some things that come out of a 10-year plan that we don't have documented, and we'll have to think about how we tweak our district improvement plan based on the provincial plan. Not every single strategy or action or goal that's in the provincial plan has to automatically be documented in a district improvement plan. Just because it's not in a district improvement plan doesn't mean it's not something that we don't focus on.
Anyone else? Now, as far as FTE for next year, is there anything to report yet? Or
yes, we received our FTE from the province. It was as expected and in line with enrollment. So it's a fair number. In addition to this, there's an invitation for us to examine the impact of our new students that have moved to Canada, our newcomer students from Syria, and to submit to the department a request for additional FTE based on needs associated with those new students. Most of our newcomer students from Syria are concentrated in the Fredericton, city of Fredericton area. So we have our first allotment, and we expect a small little top up after we go through that process of cross-referencing.
I just have a couple of questions around academic excellence, and I'm just wondering, I realize that that some of the younger kids in the grade fours or whatever are doing some provincial testing right now. Has there been provincial testing this year that we've not heard reports on?
Yes, it's a pilot year for that new grade six assessment. So the new grade six assessment is literacy, math, and science all together, and because it's a pilot, we're in that pilot phase. They are results that are reported publicly. Anything else with that?
Anything else? Next report. Thank you.
The next one, maybe I'll do the quicker one first, the sustainability of schools, because we've focused on sustainability of schools. That's ASDW EL7, and two reports per year, but of course our big report was in January of this year when we concluded our sustainability studies. But for the purpose of our planning cycle, we've prepared this report. Just a reminder that this policy calls for us to have steps in place considering the closure of a school. We need to be in alignment with Provincial Policy 409, the multi-year school infrastructure planning, and we need to make sure that there's sufficient notice and consultation with the public and with stakeholders, and that there's adequate time, all characteristics that we adhered to during our sustainability studies from May of 2015 to January of 2016. There are a series of steps and timelines regarding the process that we follow. As you recall, we had four sustainability studies launched in May, and they came to a close in January of this calendar year. A lot of great support from our staff. Of course, full commitment from the DEC, a lot of time in attending meetings and reviewing documentation and engaging in discussions. The four studies included the communities of Burton, McAdam, Millville, and Nakwik, and those communities were actively engaged in the study as well. Three of our four studies resulted in a vote for status quo: Burton Elementary, McAdam Elementary, and the three Nakwik schools as a cluster. And one of the studies resulted in a school closure. Millville Elementary School is scheduled to close on June 30th of 2016. Looking ahead, you as a council passed a motion 1 month early, actually last April, at our public meeting to request a 1-year exemption from the five triggered schools for study in 2016-17, and we expect the minister to reply in the near future. So that's, this report is just sort of more in line with the keeping up with the planning cycle, but just a lot of little reminders of our many months of work on the sustainability studies.
Any questions?
I can tell you we've been working with Millville in trying to make the transition as smooth as possible.
And you will see, I think we posted it on the portal, we did receive a letter from the minister in response to our request, the motion we made about 100 students. Anyway, he's committed to looking at 409, and he said that publicly just to have a chat to see where all the districts are. So he is, well, I don't think he's planned any major changes. He has asked for feedback. And he has reaffirmed that asking for an exemption based on the fact that we're in election year is a reasonable reason, although he hasn't given us any official status on a request to accept the schools. So that's where we're at. Any questions? Next report. Thank you, David.
So the next report, I'll start it, and then I'm sure Sean will jump in as we move along. It's the effective use of schools. 19-pager, not including the extra appendices.
You don't read all of it?
I'm not going to read it all, word for word, unless you'd like.
Most of
it. That's quite all right, necessary.
That's all right.
So no, this policy on the effective use of schools, again, it's twice per year and usually in line with the sustainability of schools. Again, wonderful support from Diane Kay and her administrative assistant, Janice Weber, as well as Sean Tracy and Philip Cliff. So this is the debt policy where we look at the potential for changes in program offerings or grade level configurations or school boundaries, changes to school boundaries and our facilities. We talk a little bit about enrollment projection and functional capacity ratings. There's some parameters about project teams within the policy and some timelines in reaching final decisions. Currently in our district we have 70 schools, although Millville Elementary School is scheduled to close on June 30th following the sustainability studies. I've already mentioned the status quo votes for the other three. We have a host of modular classrooms at various schools in our district. These schools are listed here. You can see some as little as one. One as little as one, and one as many as eight modular classrooms. For those of you who haven't been in a modular classroom in the last 20 or 25 years, I think when we went to school, perhaps they were trailers, and it's not that way anymore. So our modular classrooms are comfortable, but they are an addition to the permanent structure. We've requested four new modulars, Sean, for next year, or was that four after the, okay, so four in total for the 2016-17 year based on our analysis of schools that are full and feedback from principals, and we see those going on to Nashwauxis Memorial Elementary, Forest Hill Elementary, Liverpool Elementary, and Priestman Street Elementary. We're experiencing an increase in student population at these schools. Some in part to our newcomers from abroad, not only from Syria, but from many different nations. But this would bring our total to about 30 modular classrooms attached to our facilities. You can see the latest round is right here in the city of Fredericton. Functional capacity. That's a percentage that describes enrollment in comparison with available classroom space. The 2015-16 functional capacity values are summarized for you in this report in the first appendix. So there's a list of our 70 schools with the enrollment and the functional capacity of each. Categories, we would say that A functional capacity less than 60% suggests that there is some available space in the building, and any capacity ratings above 80% would suggest that the school is fairly full based on the space available. And as you know, this rating is an important value because it may serve as a trigger in launching a sustainability study. If a functional capacity is less than 30%, or an enrollment is less than 100 students, then those qualify for triggers. According to the triggers, we had five. Chipman Forest Avenue due to functional capacity, and then Doaktown Elementary, Kingsclear Consolidated, McAdam Avenue Elementary, and Upper Miramichi Elementary as our four schools with less than 100 students. And you as a council voted in favor of requesting an exemption for these studies next year. And part of the multifunction infrastructure proposal is decisions on major capital construction priorities and the capital improvement project priorities, and that's something that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the agenda tonight. The quick snapshot is we would have about 25 projects amounting to just over $3 million on our capital improvement project list. And if you were to look at every single project of every single school, if it was an absolute perfect world with a bottomless pit of money, we'd have about 479 projects amounting to about $60 million. To bring 69 schools to, I guess you could say, almost brand new status. So that's a lottery win for someone who'd like to donate to the province. Mm-hmm. Enrollment numbers. The official date, you might remember, is September 30th. In the 2014-15 school year, that was last school year, we had 23,273. In this school year, the official number, as reported on September 30th, was 22,874. So we saw a decline of 399 students. I can tell you that with our Syrian student newcomers alone, we've gained back about 165 of them. Six schools were realigned within our education center framework. That happened for the first time this year. We saw five schools realigned to work under the leadership of the Oromocto staff, and we saw one school work under the move from the Woodstock Center to the Fredericton Center. It provided a better balance for district service to these schools, and I can show you the official enrollment document. That's Appendix B. French immersion. We have French immersion in our school district, 37 schools across the K-12 system that have French immersion students in either the grade 1 or the grade 3 program. 17 schools in the 6-12 system host students that have entered French immersion in grade 6, the late immersion. I've noted our enrollment registrations in Appendix C for French immersion for next year. When we make decisions on whether French immersion can be run, it's rooted in Provincial Policy 309. So looking ahead, I'll mention Millville Elementary School. We'll potentially not conduct any formal sustainability studies if the minister accepts four modular classrooms being added. And it's worth noting as well, a discussion that'll happen tonight, that the DEC is considering some changes in boundaries that could impact school enrollment in the Leo Hayes catchment area, as well as the Nakwik, Stanley, and Oromocto catchment areas. I should say Fredericton South as well, but we'll talk about that a little bit more when it comes up on the agenda. And then we will do as required and submit our multi-year school infrastructure plan prior to the end of May. You'll see a little bit more about it tonight. So I mentioned a few appendices A through C, the functional capacity information, definition of these workstations of different rooms, the maximum class size as factors, And then here's a list of our functional capacity. So of course that's all available to you on your portal, and it will be available publicly when we upload the report. The second document, you have to probably look sideways and expand it a little bit to see the numbers, but this is the enrollment for every grade in every school of our district, so by grade level and by program. So it shows when you see, you can see sometimes a shading. Oops, wrong way. Let's do it twice now. So sometimes you can see a shading that amounts to, that shows a combined class. Okay, so a 7-8, a 6-7. And then, so that's a pretty big document, actually, and it's one that we use quite a bit throughout the year when we're trying to look at the numbers. And then finally, we have Appendix C, our French immersion numbers. The students from this school year, the numbers, as well as the registrations for next school year. You can see the different schools that host French immersion programs. So again, it's all there for you to have a look at. And if you don't have questions tonight, please make sure you send them along to me, and I'd be happy to answer them as well. The next part, I think it'd be best for me
Yes? Excuse me, before, just a small point, but just expecting down to the functional capacities in Priestman Street. Even they've got a bunch of portables out there.
Yes.
I call them portables. That's old school.
Sure.
84% capacity. I thought it would have been higher than that.
Yes. Sean, I think that the 84% for Priestman includes the portable as a learning station.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So if you were to take away two of those stations, there's two portables there now?
Yes.
And one more on the way. If you were to take those away, that functional capacity would be higher.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the portables are kind of in that is.
They are in this summary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, functional capacity is not a number that I would ever tattoo on my forearm, because there's different interpretations of a teaching station. And you know, Sean might do the calculation, the department might do the calculation, and they might not be exact. So it comes into a little bit of interpretation comes into play here as well.
You and the department wouldn't have matching tattoos.
No, we might not
have
matching tattoos. No. Please don't quote me on that, Tara.
Or me.
So
we'll
maybe this might be for this part of the, because we're going to switch screens, so maybe we'll see if there's a first round of questions on enrollment or French immersion or functional capacity.
I have a couple questions, but if you're going to answer them, just let me know. Infrastructure binder, is that updated yet, or is that what's going to be updated by the end of May?
It's going to be updated by the end of May. It's being worked on right now. It's not being produced in a binder. It's being posted on the portal site and available electronically.
Okay.
Sean's going to show you
what a summary looks like.
And when you realign the schools by Ed Center, how is that working?
It's working fine. It's what it's done is it's balanced out workload for subject coordinators, director of schools, and managers. It doesn't mean that, you know, just because there are some schools within the city of Fredericton associated with leadership from the Oromocto Center, it doesn't necessarily take them away from the Fredericton scene.
Right.
But it's more of just the framework for providing the
service,
the district support. Yeah.
Sheila?
David, when you say that, it kind of sounds like you're going back to the old District 14, 17, 18, whatever we had when you put your schools with your service.
Mm-hmm. There's.
Is it because that worked better?
No. In fact, we try and stress Anglophone West as much as possible. But the reality is we, in our plan of establishment right now, and we would have three directors of schools. So this has now balanced it out a little bit so that each director has a comparable number of schools and therefore teachers and students under their umbrella. Likewise with some facilities teams and human resources teams. So those, a lot of those departments, we get them in threes because of that education center concept.
So Jay is Fredericton. Who's
Jay is Woodstock.
Who's Fredericton?
Tanya is Fredericton, and Rick is Oromocto. Rick Demings, Tanya Whitney, and Jay Colpitz.
Policy 309 as it relates to French immersion.
Yes.
What specifically?
There's a statement within policy 309 that says we can create French immersion classes when the class sizes would be comparable to the class sizes of the English classes. I don't know if I described that. So, for instance, if there are 40 kids in grade 3 at a school, and 34 of them chose English and 6 of them chose French, we wouldn't have a class of 17 English, and 6 French, because this number 6 and the number 17 aren't comparable.
Apart.
They're
right.
Too far apart. That's right.
But if you had a small school with 12 students and 6-1 in French and 6-1 in English?
We probably wouldn't, because if there are just 12 students there, that's enough for one class.
So,
actually, go ahead. I thought the number was 13. But David, couldn't you put those kids that wanted French? Isn't that when you come into the combined classes?
We don't,
in time to grade 1 immersion.
Sure, it's not really good to combine in the first year of French immersion, because French immersion is a language acquisition program. So, for instance, if you were to currently it's a grade 3 entry point. So if you were to combine a 3 and a 4, grade 3s are coming in ready, starting from scratch, ready to, and I shouldn't say scratch, they had the learning experiences, but, you know, they're starting, they're acquiring the language, whereas in grade 4, they're a little more competent in language. There are two examples in late immersion where we've done it, and it's for survival of the program, because we wouldn't be able to sustain it any otherwise.
So if somebody wants French but there's not enough in their school to take it, in some cases we know the program's offered nearby and they're bused there.
It's not an obligation to bus, but in some cases
right.
It works that way.
So would you say, so not every student in Anglophone West has access to the program. If enough people don't sign up, that program's not offered and they don't have access.
That would be correct.
Okay.
Access with, you know, with busing and all
right.
That.
Okay.
Now they have access to French because our curricular program
right.
Sees pre-intensive French in grade 4,
right.
The intensive French program in grade 5,
right.
Post-intensive French from grade 6 to 10. So every student is exposed to French one way or another.
But they don't all have access.
They don't have access to immersion.
Unless, you know, they sign up. Enough people sign up.
Right.
I have one more question. David, this is about more in my Grand Falls area. My John Caldwell kids. If they're coming from a French parents, mother and father.
Yes.
They're not allowed to go to my English John Caldwell. Is there,
they're
is
allowed
that right?
to go to John Caldwell. They're not allowed to take French immersion. So
okay.
if
they're
going to
go
a Francophone student, that's right.
Okay.
A French student, a Francophone student, can't take French immersion in the English system. Yeah. because it's language acquisition.
Right.
And they've already acquired, like, that's their mother tongue.
Has there been any more work with the department on, I guess, nailing down functional capacity? I mean, we've talked about it last year a number of times because, you know, I mean, even if we get a functional capacity and then, you know, you have a public library in the school and then you have town council meeting in the school.
RCMP station.
RCMP.
Bases, yeah.
You know, it's hard. It's like you said, we're not hanging everything on functional capacity, but it would be nice to either continue to use those numbers and come up with another number that we can all agree on. But it doesn't necessarily give an accurate picture of what's going on in that school.
Where it's most important is at the 30% mark.
Yeah.
Right? Because of a trigger or a not trigger.
Right.
So, and I'll use Chipman Forest Avenue as an example. The department calls the functional capacity 25.7, I think it is, according to the trigger list. And we calculate it closer to 30. Now, there, you know, the Chipman Forest Avenue has a classroom that's been reworked as a satellite police station for the RCMP. So when it comes to functional capacity conversations that are of real importance, in particular around that 30% area, then I think what you would see is a very close look at the calculation. Of course, talking it through with the department, and then if there's simply not a match and there's a feeling that it shouldn't be triggered, then there would be that request for exemption.
Okay. Any other questions? We're ready for Sean. Good. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Sean, you want to look up here?
Yeah.
I just pulled this out and put it in. You want to sit or stand?
Blue skies, I think, so.
He would, but his links might not work. So, but I can work around that.
Just blame it on Philip.
This is one of those things, it's the IT curse. So.
Sean, you could tell these people who you are and what you do.
You have any talents?
I juggle. I'm the director of finance administration for Anglophone West, responsible for facilities, of course, budget, and transportation.
He slaps me, but not IT. So it's on his laptop. That's just not connecting.
This is still awake. Let's try that. He's hooked up to this before and I haven't. Mm-hmm. So, does he have the actual portal open? You know?
Go down to the well, it says up top it is.
Okay.
That's the file that is open.
And then the second one down. This one up higher.
I gotta find the right place in my glasses. Oh.
Go over to
there.
And
then go down.
First one.
D.
I want the presentation.
Yeah, the
first
D will be
D.
It.
That's it.
Yay.
Okay.
Good job.
It's not actually in PDF yet. Which means none of the links will work. Great. It's just getting better.
You're going to be so technically advanced, Sean.
Well, no, I would be if it actually was working. But anyway, we'll go with this. Okay. So this is basic. This document basically is a summary of the infrastructure proposal, and in it, it contains building demographics, enrollments, functional capacity, the annual operating costs, there's historical, as well as projected capital improvements, and a bunch of different things that I'll go over with you. There are 30 slides. I will not be presenting all 30, but they're available for you. A lot of them are just referenced, and you've seen them before. So this one, school building by age, you can see a large majority of our schools were built between 1950 and 1970, over half of them. So we have 70 schools, we have 386 1,000 square meters of space. Another pictorial of representing the age. Our historical enrollment, you can see since 2002 has been trending down. So the next few slides deal with cost per square meter, and this is where the operational costs come in, and we look at things like electricity, fuel, natural gas, if we have a school with that, snow removal, water and sewage, garbage removal, cleaning supplies and services, as well as some minor repairs. So those are compared to the square meters, and then the cost per square meter is established per school.
What's the average?
I have a slide on that. So in the middle school, it's the same idea. High school in K-12. So the district average cost per square meter is $26.32. The average operating cost of an elementary per square meter is $26.78. It's $25.94 for middle school and $25.84 for high school. So pretty consistent. So the next comparison that we do is taking the same factors compared to a student enrollment. So there's where you see a lot of variability in the rates, depending on, of course, the number of kids versus the number of repairs that may take place in an older building, could drive the cost up. So you can see in that first slide, if you look at Andover Elementary, it's at 549. If you look at Doaktown, it's at 1,719. It's quite a difference. So the district average cost is $517.89. The elementary average is $435. The middle school is $541 per student, and the high school is $640. So, last year we had submitted projects through this process, and these are the projects that were approved by government. And the work is being done this summer for 16-17, fiscal year, not school year. So you can see we have a number of roof replacements going on, as well as heating projects, some fire upgrades, heating and ventilation, some windows. We've got some gym flooring going in, washroom upgrades. And some site improvements at our school. So we were awarded a total allocation of $2.6 million for our capital improvement for this summer.
It's
So a lot of those projects are already well past design and tender, and some are actually out. I noticed last night I was in Perth Andover in Southern Victoria was prepping for their brick repointing for this summer already. Okay, so this isn't going to work, but. So, in the actual infrastructure database that we have that will be on the portal for each school, we have a series of documents like this for each one of our school buildings. So, shows a little picture of the school, some functional capacity information, as well as enrollment trends for a number of years, an actual physical description of the building. And then an enrollment history, and information about feeder schools and catchment area boundaries is contained on each one of those school plans that you have access to. There's a map of the catchment area for Barker's Point, in this example. A summary of the operational costs.
Are those the same costs in your grid?
I believe so. I believe they use fiscal 2016 that just ended.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But the categories are the
same.
Yes,
the categories are the same. Yeah. And this would be the history of capital improvement projects, major capital or capital improvement at that particular location. So this is a cumulative summary of what the actual cost of the final cost of the improvement. And we get those details from the department once it's been finalized. And then there's a little summary of those projects. Floor map of the actual school, showing the layout. And then finally, an overhead to be able to see the actual property. So we have that for each one of our schools. And the department is undergoing a process where they're taking our information that we've provided and they're developing a database. So each year we only have to go in and change, update information instead of create. Right now we're into a copy, paste, create sort of process, which takes quite a bit of time to get it together. So they have a systems person that's taking what we've created in Anglophone West, putting it into a program, and then the whole province will be following this template. So that's that part of it. Now, I lost my presentation by doing that. I'll go back and find it. Okay, so David talked earlier about the trigger schools, so I won't belabor that. So, this is last year's major capital DEC approved list that you sent into the minister saying these were our priorities last year in
16-17.
15-16? No, it's fiscal as opposed to school year. Yeah, because I asked the very same question, but this is a fiscal report as opposed to a school year report. So what we're approving tonight is actually the 17-18. We had Fredericton High School Midlife Upgrade, which was a continuation from the previous year, so that's been approved for the entire project, as well as Bath Middle School expansion was approved. Leo Hayes High School was put forward as an item Oromocto High School midlife upgrade was proposed, as well as Connaught Street Elementary, which was the expansion, which was adding a gymnasium and a cafeteria. So last year, what we actually were awarded for this year were the continuation of Fredericton High School and a study at Bath Middle School were our approved projects. So the list tonight for major capital approving for the next round of major capital improvements is this list. It's not prioritized. It's just a list that myself and my staff put together. It's up to the council to determine what goes where when it goes into the department. So we have Leo Hayes High School on there again this year. We have a proposal of a handball study on there as well to look at that catchment area, and also in collaboration with Fredericton School study that we proposed to the department already. The Oromocto High School midlife upgrade, the Connaught Street thing, as well as Woodstock High School and Carlton North High School midlife upgrades, just because of the year and the age of the school, and so we're getting those on there, so we get to a point of where they actually score a certain way with the department, and we can get some substantial improvements to those buildings as well. So, did you want me to go on to the capital improvement part, which is the 30 projects, and explain that, or did you want to talk about that as the?
We have to talk about it anyway later on.
Later,
so
if it's I can just keep tracking
yeah,
in with the next.
Is that fine? We have to bring that up. We have to bring the other list up.
Okay.
Further on down
these. I'll show you the. So this part sort of brings the superintendent monitoring report to a close.
Right. Yeah. We'll take questions on it, but then we'll get into our new business. Yeah.
Okay. So now we'll go to busy.
Get a little bigger, Sean, maybe with that plus sign.
So what were you going to go to in the link?
The link was to this, but the link actually goes on your portal when you're signed in. It actually goes to the complete list with all 479
right.
projects.
Right.
For the purposes of tonight, we condensed that to the 25 priorities that we thought that we might be able to get approved.
And we're going to discuss this under new business, or
it's just part of that. It's just part of that whole
report. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So, in the actual capital improvement project list that we have this year, we went through a process of examining our list, and with the three assistant managers of facilities, along with the facilities manager and myself, we met several times around this topic and come up with around the $3 million mark for projects for next year. The only thing, this is sort of a living list, as you know, like the list is approved in theory as is presented, but there are a number of factors that come into play. There could be a health and safety thing that come up between now and the list is actually finally adopted by the department, as well as a roofing report that we're waiting for from DTI. So if they say we have a bad roof that we haven't captured, we do have a couple of roofing things in our top 25, but if there's something else on there, we'd have to prioritize that in, so that may shift some things down and out of scope from this list that you have in Appendix E. So again, with capital improvement projects, there any project that is estimated in cost over $10,000 to complete. So we have a list, of course, for every school, and so we have a number of things we put on here for your consideration tonight, and I suspect you don't want me to go over every 25.
No.
I won't do that.
Thank you.
So if you have questions later on, I'd be happy to answer them when we get to that point.
Sure.
Sean, can you explain why we don't put the individual estimated cost for each category?
Sure. Well, of course, we have that there, but we don't put it up publicly because of the competition. When we put these things out to tender, we don't want our competitors out there or our bidders knowing that we're putting a ventilation system out and the value is, say, $300,000, then we're going to get bids of 300 or more. So that's why we don't put it out in advance. But we do make it public once it's complete and finalized. Those costs are available.
So that's the report. Any questions on the report? Can you explain again the roofs? Before you used to have roofs in there. Now they just put them in.
Yes. So we get the roof report from the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure.
Right.
And they're supposed to have that to us in April.
Right.
And we've not received it yet. It's still being worked on. So we're supposed to have it in time for May 31st, which is the official end date. That's why I say that it could change if there was a roof on there that we would have to factor in. But of course, it's a living document, so you folks would have access to that.
We have a rough idea of what to expect. We sort of know where our bad
roofs
are.
We've put our bad roofs
yes.
that have to be fixed this year
right.
in our top 25
okay.
to be fixed. So unless there's something on that report from their inspections that they've done in their last round that we weren't aware of, then that would be the only way that it would change. So ideally, we would like to have all that information when we're making decisions about our
mm-hmm.
top $3 million for the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sheila?
Can you scroll down a little bit there?
And we're going to go through that list under new business specifically, just so you know.
We are?
Yeah.
I'll ask a question then to Sean.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's up to you. Yeah. Just under Bath, what did we get funded for?
We are funded for $70,000 for
yeah.
a study
yeah.
on, I guess, the first part of it is the, they're doing a building assessment
yeah.
on Bath Middle School. As well as the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-part study.
And
just
yeah.
if you stop, Mr. Chair, I heard him say they're going to do a study of those two buildings in Bath after we did a sustainability study on Bath.
Right.
Okay.
So they're studying they're going to study the empty building.
They are. It's now their building, so
right.
they're also assessing Bath Elementary School
okay.
as part of the Bath look.
Okay.
I just want to add, Sean, that I think this is crazy. They should have did that before we wasted our time in sustainability.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And it just embarrasses me to stand up in Bath and say, oh, we're on, everything's at a halt because we're going to study that empty school after we moved all your kids over. That's all I've got to say.
Now, what is the scope of the work that they initially had planned for the building the students are in now?
Well, it was initially estimated in our sustainability study at about $1.5 million
right.
For basically adding three classrooms on one corner of the building. That was sort of the mock-up of,
okay.
of what was part of the consideration, I guess, for that building.
Okay.
And then it's morphed since then.
Okay. Any other questions on the report? Good. Thank you, Sean. Don't go too far.
I'm just going to step over here.
I'll turn it to you, David.
Sure. So that would include...
I used your computer.
Oh, you're on it. Work. Okay. So that concludes the
reports.
Monitoring report.
Yeah.
Are there any questions from that perspective?
Any questions for David on the report? Cool. Okay, we're going to move on to new business, Village of Gagetown Land Inquiry.
This over. Thanks.
Is that you, David?
Or
Sean?
I'll start. Well, Sean?
It's on the portal.
Okay, I'll call it up and maybe why don't you talk to it, speak to it, Sean.
So, let me see here.
I guess I'll just stay over there.
Be there a while.
This is where I'll go backwards. And then, so we're on to Gagetown?
So, I received a request back in January from the village of Gagetown. They were asking for a right-of-way on our property to access their lift station. Their current access is ending because the property that they cross is now being subdivided into a subdivision because it's riverfront property. So they need a new way to get to the lift station. So their initial ask was to come into the school property. And they wanted to set upside down.
As you come in, so
yeah.
It's sort of right side up.
Yeah. So their original request was to come in across this way and then down around here to where the lift station's located, and that would have saw a number of trees being having to be moved or cut because of it's a memorial garden. And a celebration garden for the school. So obviously they didn't want a road going through there. So we went back to them and we said, would you consider, like, is coming in here along the upper part of the ball field and going along the back line fence, would that be an option? So they went back to their architect scoped it out. I went down there to meet with them, Philip and I did, and we had a walk around the property on a very wet, rainy day, and it indeed will work to come in here across from this driveway down in the Constructor Road. It'll have no impact on school operations or the sports field. It actually is going to be at the very back of the sports field, and so they'll be in there maximum, I think the mayor told me, four times a year to access the lift station. And as part of the right-of-way access, we're not actually giving them our property, we're just granting them right-of-way, is this gazebo that's here. The village offered to move that, and the principal was excited about that, being able to move that over to the playground area so students would have access to that because it's underutilized now because it's out of the current play area. So if we go back to the actual plan here, and if we can rotate that. So, on paper, this is what will be going to the Department of Education if the DEC approves this proceeding. So nothing has been decided yet. This is just information for council to make a decision as to whether to grant access. The principal does support the project. She was informed of it when it came out, and as well as had input into the day that we were down there having a look. So, you have any questions?
What about costs, John?
All costs are borne by the village.
So we would need a motion to that effect to grant access.
Mm-hmm. I'd make that motion.
Kimberly, seconder. Terry, any questions on the motion? All in favor, say
aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
So Sean, do we give that information to the Department of Education or to DTI, or what next?
Based on the motion tonight, I can just inform my contact at the department as well as the mayor that it has been has been approved by the DEC.
Yeah.
Now it's the paperwork side of things between education and the town to make it happen legally.
Okay. Education as in the Department of Education.
Department of Education.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're done after you...
After I send the email, we're basically done.
Someday we'll see a road building.
We'll see a road, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good.
Great. So, capital improvement projects, which was Appendix E. It's on your portal as Appendix E. And we probably could just start with questions unless anyone wants Sean to present some things. I know we have a copy, but... Sheila, do you have a question?
Is this my number 10, my Southern Vic? Where is that? Number 13.
Number 13, yeah.
In 2012, we had a flood in Perth that didn't really make contact to our gym, but ruined some of the rest of the school. And it's in a flood zone. So I'm looking at number 13, and you're going to replace those gym floors and now remove the bleachers because they're unsafe, and they have been unsafe for quite a while. We've had two older women that fell and broke hips during graduation ceremonies, which are now held at the Civic Center. Why are we investing money into this? Why shouldn't we be thinking about moving these kids elsewhere? It's another case of wasting our tax dollars.
Well, I guess my response to that would be is that the district slash government has invested a lot of money in the repairs after the flood. A number of things that were destroyed during the flood, like the main boiler system for the school, the electrical room for the school, were actually moved up to above flood stage level of that particular flood of 2012. So they've been relocated to the first floor, as well as another area. The teaching theater has received some capital improvements there as well. In the side wall and stuff before was drywall and very susceptible, of course, to water damage. And the theater seats were cushioned seats, again, would get wet and all that. So they've been switched over to something that's more durable. So this project has been a long time project on the capital improvement list for the bleacher part. The floor part, the floor is just at its end of life. So that's part of it. It's the gym floor replacement. But the costly part is actually removing the cement foundation for those bleachers that are there now. And once those were removed, you would see new commercial style bleachers that we would see in the school today that would be added, that so the school would actually be able to hold a graduation or a larger school event in the actual school without having to go next door to the Civic Center. So that's the premise behind the project.
So the flood money dollars doesn't take care of the gym and bleachers?
No. The initial flood cost was covered by the department and then by the Department of Public Safety, and they've been working through the feds for their portion to give back, but this is outside of that.
Sean, if that happened to flood again, then would you think about moving it? Or not moving the school, of course, moving the kids? You could never move
I think
kids
that would be something that the council would have to decide if they wanted to, you know, study the Perth Andover catchment area, because it's not just Southern Victoria that's in the flood zone, it's also Andover Elementary School, and they have a large gym that was a major capital mm-hmm. improvement to that facility that was very costly for government to put that in there. So all of those things would have to be factored into actually moving the school somewhere else out of the floodplain. But
yeah, the Andover Elementary Gym was called the Gym 2000 Project, and we moved into it in 2010.
Yeah.
So 10 years later, we got our gym.
10-year education plan.
10-year education plan. I'm just wondering, how many times does a building have to be damaged to for you guys to think about doing something.
Well,
because when you speak about the mini theater is still down in a hole.
It is, yeah. And there's potential every year for a
flood. Yeah.
And I guess I would say if there was another damaged flood, you know, that happened, the school was impacted, then Department of Transportation Infrastructure, the people that actually own the building,
yeah,
would have to assess whether the building was viable any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And if they deemed that it wasn't, then we would have to obviously find a place for our kids to go. I know during the last flood, while the observatory was being remediated, the kids went, half the students went to Tobique Valley and the other half went to John Caldwell School in Grand Falls. And
mm-hmm.
That was a, you know, the community really rallied around that whole thing and made it work, and teachers, you know, went above and beyond. And,
yeah.
And
it worked fine, yes it did.
Yeah.
If I remember policy 409 correctly, you don't have to go through the same rigorous sustainability study process if a school needs to be closed due to some kind of extreme circumstance. Fire seems to be,
yeah,
you know, the one that stands out the most. But you know, but I guess the council, if the council is that concerned about it, and I don't think we're there yet, so
no,
that's not what I'm saying,
yet.
But if the council was that concerned about it, then potentially they could conduct a sustainability study and look at whether a new school should be constructed on an alternate site. I don't know. Like I say, I don't think we're at that point, but
no.
A sustainability study is the process now for closing the school.
And I realize there's schools in our district that are plugging with students that are, it's much more of a priority for them, but I just know how long this stuff takes. We waited 10 years for a gym at Andover Elementary, and government tends to be a little bit slow. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome.
Any other questions on the list? Did they give any indication as to the amount of funding, or we're just...
We based it on the historical amount we usually receive. Like this coming year, if we have $2.6 million, so we prioritize the first $3 million of our list in just the projects that we'd like to see done if we did get funded to the same level.
2.6 is a little light.
It was 2.8 the year before.
Right. Okay.
I would just propose a motion that we approve the capital improvements list as presented by the Director of Finance.
Do we need a seconder? Sheila? Any questions? Ready for the question?
Questions?
Say aye.
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 Contrary? So sign. Motion passed. Major capital construction, so go back to that list. Have a list. It's not prioritized. We can discuss it. Obviously, you know, motions will have to be made, so I'll just leave it up to you as the floor. Anyone have any questions, comments? Kim?
I'd like to speak to the Leo Hayes continuation. I think in the past we've asked for an addition to Leo Hayes, and this year we've had the opportunity to look at the possibility of addressing some of the attendance issues there in other ways, and maybe we can look at changing what we're asking for Leo Hayes High School, and perhaps have better success at getting it. I'd like to read a motion I have. with some detail attached to it so that we don't have to discuss it at length after I, although there may be some discussion. Whereas Leo Hayes High School is the second largest high school in New Brunswick, operating at capacity with 1,800 students. Whereas only 4 of 18 possible skilled trade options are available at Leo Hayes, and although some options are available at FHS, with the FHS options, only 20 to 40 students can be accommodated, depending on FHS space and available staff. Students must take both afternoon periods in a skilled trade course, with no choice as to the course. This eliminates those who must take other course requirements in one time slot. Students are excluded from most after-school and noon activities at Leo Hayes, which keeps them from benefiting from extra help and extracurricular activities. Whereas renovations at Leo Hayes created the woodworking lab and the culinary tech lab, which both operate at capacity, 5 periods a day, both semesters, all classes at maximum size, but carpentry, automotive, metal fabrication, and sheathing and framing cannot be offered under the current structure. Whereas Leo Hayes serves a large community who would benefit from having access to the skilled trade facilities and would have the opportunity to participate in summer co-op employment and apprenticeship programs. And it is recognized as well that participation in skilled trades programs is of benefit to students who are not planning skilled trades careers, but go on to find employment in areas such as engineering, power technology, and other related fields. I move that we request a skills trade addition to Leo Hayes and that we make it our number one priority for major capital construction.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Okay. So we have a motion on the floor. Can I have a pass it on the camera? So the motion specifically, without all the preamble, says, I therefore move that we request a skills trade addition to Leo Hayes and that we make it our number one priority for major capital construction. So is there any questions or discussions on that motion? And Ron?
I'd like to add my support to that, and I would be voting in favor of this motion. And I recall the presentation at our last meeting from the group looking at a Hanwell school, and I liked the slide the gentleman here presented, the one where he showed this with a certain population, which communities didn't have a school, and the next slide showed one alone. That was Hanwell. It was the same thing here. If you looked at a school the size anywhere near this school that could provide the proper courses and the trade-type courses, and you took all the ones away that didn't, I think you'd be left with Leo Hayes. And I think it's not good that we would have a school in our district of that size with that many kids interested in those trade courses that we don't have that availability to on-site and not being bused somewhere. I think that is absolutely... a terrible thing to be happening in our district, and I support this motion entirely.
Any other questions? Ready for the question? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, same sign. Motion carried. Okay, so we have others on the list.
I would propose a motion to address item number 2 on the list, that a study be done as part of the South School study on the Hanwell area specifically related to elementary schools.
Okay. So we have that motion. We have a seconder on that. Terry? Thank you. I just have a question for clarification. Sean, this is not a capital construction request, but it is a study. How does the department view that?
Yeah, good point, yeah. It's still a major capital.
Still a major capital, and hopefully it's approved. What they'll do is they'll do a study similar to what Ernst & Young. This is not an architectural study either.
No,
this would be
a comprehensive study like we saw for Leo Hayes.
Okay.
You have recommendations.
Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, we're looking at a study not just of the Hanwell area, but the other schools in that Fredericton South area,
right.
Elementary schools.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any questions on that motion? Anyone understand? Ready for the question?
Aye.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Okay. All right. Number three.
Put that in number two, please.
That puts it in number two. We can't. That was, I think that's understood. And these are not in order, so you can make, you know, different order. And as the counselor from Oromocto, I know Oromocto is needed. I know also Connaught Street is needed. I can't speak for Woodstock or Carleton North. I think they're all good projects, but.
I'd like to make a motion that Carleton North enters this at this time, and it's certainly an upgrade that it's needed and has been needed for quite some time.
You want them to be third on the list? Is that what you're saying?
That would be a great idea.
Okay.
I second that.
Okay. Good. Any questions on that?
Can I ask, I know that the things on that list aren't in any order. Can I ask for a general opinion on that? Most of the rest of us don't have any idea, you know, the difference between what Woodstock needs and Carleton North needs. And
compared to Oromocto.
Right,
yeah. Well, 40-year-old school, yeah. Like Oromocto, we had it on there last year. I know that it has been, it's gone through the scoring process of the department already, so it would be a good one to have on the list. Should it be prioritized above Carleton North? I'm not really sure it'll make a great difference.
Do you know where they scored?
I can't recall 100%, but it is a good score. We know that Oromocto High and Connaught have gone through the scoring process as a result of being on the list last year. Woodstock and Carleton North are new to
their being there, so this year.
And
did
I
you
think
say Connaught? Sorry, David?
Oromocto High and Connaught have been scored because they've been on the list previous years. And Woodstock High and Carleton North would be added for the first time, so they haven't been reviewed through the quadruple bottom line process.
But Connaught scored quite high on that list, yes.
Higher than Oromocto?
I believe so.
Okay, so could we make a motion to put Connaught, Oromocto, Carleton, and then Woodstock? We could put Woodstock last because John Slip isn't here.
So right now there's a motion on the floor for Carleton North. So you could amend that, or you can defeat it. It's up to you. If you call,
we got there, Leo Hayes.
So, right now, Carleton North. The motion is to make it number three. So,
I would like to move an amendment to that motion to put Carleton North to number. How many do we have there? Six. To number five.
Three.
Behind Oromocto and Connaught.
And Connaught higher than Oromocto?
Behind Oromocto and Connaught,
yeah.
So lower than them,
yeah.
But above Woodstock.
Okay,
so.
That's my amendment.
For those that are of us that are visual learners, could we review that again, please?
Okay, so the amendment, if we just get everyone's attention, the amendment is to make it number five on the list. So we've already voted on a number one.
Which we make number five, Carleton?
Right. We've already got a number two, so this is going to be listed as a five. That's an amendment. Okay, now there's been no debate yet. We need a seconder on that amendment. Elizabeth. So now we're debating the amendment of whether it should be number five or not, and then we're going to vote on the amendment. And so you can vote to pass the amendment, which means then you'd have to vote on the main motion, or you can vote to defeat the amendment. Then the main motion reverts back to it being number three. Clear as mud? So let's just stick with the amendment right now. The amendment is to make it number five.
To make what number?
Carleton North, number
okay.
Five. Any questions? Are we ready for the vote on
so
the amendment?
So everything above Connaught, Oromocto, that's all staying as is printed.
Well, we haven't voted on the number three position or the number four yet.
Okay.
So if you have six lines, we've filled in the top two, and right now we're jumping to number five.
So all we're doing is moving Woodstock and Carleton North.
Reversing them.
Reversing them.
Well, we don't know what the other motions. We don't know how this is going to play out, but we don't know what other motions are coming. But yes,
I would speak to that if you. Kimberly. No one else. Just the reason I would leave Oromocto and Kanawha above is looking at the likelihood of getting money for anything. So if they've been scored high on a needs rating, then we're more likely to get money for them than we are for a school that hasn't even been rated yet. That's the only reason I make that motion.
How old is Oromocto High?
Yeah, Sean, you can put it in the PowerPoint.
1960s.
When was it renovated?
And renovation 1976.
In 77, 78, 79, 80. Every year.
Every year. I was just going to say, they've had many renovations.
Roofs, mostly.
Yes, roofs.
Okay, so as far as the amendment, anyone else?
Ready question.
For a question? Again, the amendment that Carlton North be placed number 5 on the list.
Question.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, same sign.
Nay.
Okay, we're going to do a show of hands. All in favor, raise your right hand. Contrary, same sign. Okay, so the amendment is carried. So technically, now the motion is that it's number 5 on the list. So we have to vote on it again because it changed it. Okay, so are we ready? It's now changed from number 3 to number 5. So we'll call for the question again. All in favor of it being number 5? Raise, signify by raising your hand. Contrary, same sign. Okay, so the amendment was passed. The main motion was passed. Carlton North is number 5 on the list. Okay, so we have number 3 and number 4 open. Do we have a motion to put those as number 3 and number 4? Fills number 3 and number 4?
My motion was to have those as in the 3 and 4 slot, above Carlton North.
Well, as I had read it and repeated it, that's what we voted on, so we would need another motion for proper procedure. Jane?
I would move a motion that we move Connaught Street and Oromocto High in sections 3 and 4.
Connaught Street being?
3 and Oromocto being 4.
Okay, do we have a seconder on that? Okay, so there's a motion on the floor, Connaught Street to be number 3, Oromocto High to be number 4. Do we have any questions? Ready for the question?
Question.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, same sign. Okay. And
we need a motion for which stuff?
May as well. Let it be number 6.
Well, I think that Miriam should make that motion.
Why me? It's not my area. It's
yours. No, but it's John's.
I go live with John. You know.
Well, isn't that where it's left
anyway?
It's left there anyway.
Unless we remove from the list.
I mean, really, that's the only place it can go.
Do we want to keep it on the list? We should
take it off.
Yes.
Yeah.
I move that we keep Woodstock High School on the list. Yes.
In the 6th position.
In the 6th position.
No, I'm not going that far.
In the 6th position.
One place
okay, so we have a well, the mover said we keep it on the list.
There we go.
Is that period?
That's
okay.
Period.
Do we have a seconder to that motion? Sheila? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Roger. Okay. We have the list. Carol, you got that? John sends his regrets. Unfortunately, he was just running too late to be able to make it to the meeting, and he apologizes. And he hopes we support the mental health. So,
where's your cup?
Potato harvest. So, are we prepared to deal with potato harvest without John?
No, because he has the paperwork.
I think it'd be fitting if we had a formal motion to move it to June's meeting. Jane, seconder, Sheila?
Question?
Did
John say he couldn't make the June meeting?
He'll have to send his paperwork.
We don't have it now.
Okay.
So we got a motion to move the potato harvest discussion to June meeting. Any other questions on the motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Mental health, I'm pretty sure we can carry on. We're going to look at year five.
That's debatable.
That is debatable.
Sorry.
No, no, this is good. It's all good.
We needed a little humor.
We did.
So I've had worse meetings. All right. ER 5, you'll see on your portal, the recommendation was made to amend this policy under policy name Healthy Living, Good Mental Health, Nutrition, and Physical Activity. It's up, oh, it's up on the screen. That's awesome. Second paragraph of the policy, the deck supports the instruction of and practice of healthy living, good mental health, nutrition, physical activity. The rest remains the same. Those are the recommended additions to that policy. We can have questions or entertain a motion and take questions after, whatever your preference.
I'd like to move that we make the suggested changes to that policy.
I second that.
Okay. Any questions on that?
I would just question using the term good mental health versus just mental health. The title.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
that
in the line.
Help.
Good point.
Okay.
No,
I liked it.
Mm.
The
line.
Okay.
So.
Pick up good.
Without we haven't had debate. There's been a question. If the mover and their seconder would be willing to take out good.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to edit that. Take out under good mental mm-hmm. health. We're just taking out good. It'll be healthy living, mental health. Nutrition, physical activity, and then healthy living, mental health.
Mm-hmm. Do we take it out of the policy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Take it out of
okay.
there too.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll look like that.
Yep.
Okay. So the motion
yeah.
to, is to accept that.
Yeah.
Any discussion on the motion to accept those changes?
Mr. Chair, I think this is a good move. We are understanding that mental health is an important part of health overall, including nutrition and physical activity. I think it's a positive step forward.
Okay. Ready for the question?
Question.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Contrary, same sign. Okay. And we're going to ER 3.
I can erase this one.
Okay, it's up on the screen. The last bullet. And specifically, it says school culture will be pursued through, and then we're adding the fourth bullet, offering support for students to promote good mental health. Notice the word good is in there. I'm not sure if that's more applicable in that sense. Or
yeah, because we're promoting it.
I think that's the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we would need a motion either way. So in your motion, consider any... would you move that?
Remove. Yeah, remove.
Okay, so you would move that offering support for students to promote mental health be
right.
added to the policy.
That's right.
Yes.
Right. We don't need to make a motion to remove good because it's not in there yet. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a motion Norma made. Do we have a seconder on that? Elizabeth, offering support for students to promote mental health. Specifically, by way of clarification, this means that when the superintendent offers a report, these are some of the things that he would cover, therefore he would cover mental health, and of course I think that was the intention of the someone who submitted the motion. Any questions on it? Ready for the question?
Question.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Contrary, same side.
Okay. I have a comment. Mark, the last time we met, you had made a comment about, which on my way home I thought about Kim's passion for mental health. I think that if it's not all of our passion around this table, we shouldn't be here, because mental health is very important to all of our students in all of the district. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, so ER6. You'll see an addition there. It's being hauled up. Quality program is defined as one that offers sufficient courses enabling students to acquire the skills, aptitudes, and knowledge for them to be successful at the next level of schooling or in their workplace. And then in addition is a quality program that supports mental health. So before we make a motion, if there's any wordsmithing, you can make a motion to...
I think the word that needs to be removed because it doesn't work with the other sentence.
Agreed, yeah.
A quality program supports...
Wordsmithing, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So we would entertain a motion that would add the phrase, a quality program supports mental health.
Yeah.
Would someone make that motion? Norma, seconded. Miriam? So what's been added is a quality program supports mental health.
Right.
Any questions on that motion? Ready for the question? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, same sign. Okay. So... update the portal, and anyone who has binders, probably for the next round. Okay. Great. Moving right along. Committee reports, Leo Hayes High School.
Okay, here we go. Somebody would have to put this up on the...
What's on the portal, Jane, you want to put up there?
The report, the... PowerPoint?
This one?
Yes.
Yeah, is it in this list?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there. Fourth from the bottom, then insert.
Okay. So, we had a committee, we struck a committee in January of four members, consisting of myself as chair, Kimberly, Ron Buck, and Carrie Pond, to go over the Ernst & Young report on the multi-year infrastructure planning, of which they studied the Leo Hayes area and the catchment areas about it. So as a council, we talked about the report and we talked about having a committee look further into it. So the committee met, determined its mandate would be to look at the Ernst & Young report and make recommendations to the council with respect to the Leo Hayes catchment area in an effort to reduce the population of students at Leo Hayes to a reasonable number to kind of cut down on the overcrowding. And at the same time, the committee wanted to look at as they were talking about changing the catchment areas around Leo Hayes, they wanted to look at potentially increasing the population at some of the other outskirts schools that were smaller and potentially would have some issues with their own enrollments down the road. So we begin with the Portobello Drive to Burton Bridge area. What the committee talked about was looking at that area that would be from Portobello to the Burton Bridge, and we talked about it affecting K-12 students. That the students from K-12 would attend school in Oromocto, and the schools they would attend were, Gesner, Summerhill, Ridgeview, and Oromocto High School. Is that right?
Assiniboine, Hubbard, and Ridgeview and Oromocto High. Right.
They're on the slide.
Oh, I had them. I just had the opposite too.
Yeah,
right.
That's right. Yeah.
So Assiniboine, Hubbard, Ridgeview, and Oromocto High, because they would be in the closest proximity to the Burton Bridge. That involves right now 29 students. This proposal is slated with the idea in mind that we'd be looking at these changes for September of 2017. So the numbers that we're using here are the current numbers, so they will change a little bit between now and then. So we'll be looking at 29 students being affected. And on the next slide, you can see which schools would be impacted. The Barker's Point School, the elementary kids go there now. They're at 81% capacity. The Devon Middle School, school that has 499 students at it right now, at 70% capacity. Oromocto High, which is at 64, Ridgeview at 36, Hubbard at 53, and Assiniboine at 62. So as you can see, there would be lots of room for these kids at the, for these students at these schools that that we are recommending they move to. Part of the issue with that area is that in lots of discussions with our committee and at the district level, and with people in the particularly affected schools, indicate that that a lot of the kids that live in that area, most of their social lives are in Oromocto anyway, or a lot of their activities are in Oromocto anyway, and it just seems to make sense. It's from the Portobello Drive to the Burton Bridge, it is a 3-minute drive by car. I'm sure it'd be a little bit longer by bus, but I clocked it this morning, actually, and that's how long it is. So
with you driving?
No.
Yes, but I do follow the speed limit in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jane, just for clarification,
yes.
Many people might not know Assiniboine and Hubbard. Assiniboine's a K-2.
And Hubbard's a 3-5.
Yeah.
So the next slide shows you the Oromocto area catchment area. Oromocto schools catchment area. Any questions about this area before I move on?
I'm the chair of the LSD.
And we understand, but we're going to do our presentation, and there'll be a
there'll
time
be room
at the
for
end
public comment after.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Any questions? Okay. So now we'll move to the proposed Portobello Drive and above area. We are looking to involve 6 to 12 in this area, where the students from Portobello Drive and above would potentially move to the south side of the river. They would be bused to Bliss Carman, 6 to 8, and Fredericton High School, 9 to 12. This would involve 58 children at this point.
Jean Mandrick, just add that it says Portobello Drive and above. That means Portobello Drive to the Princess Margaret Bridge.
That's correct, yes. Yep. 22 kids in middle school and 36 that are currently attending Leo Hayes that would move to Fredericton High School. The reason that we looked at the middle school shift here was because the difficulty that kids would have moving from grade 8 at Devon Middle School to grade 9 at Fredericton High School would be a difficult transition at that age. So we felt that with the population of Devon Middle School being as high and tight as it is there, that moving 22 students out of there and putting them in Bliss Carman where there is lots of room for them, that would be the better way to go for social reasons as well as academic reasons and number crunching. So the impacted schools, Bliss Carman and Fredericton High School, so that's their functional capacities at this point. The number 582, 86.8 for Bliss Carman was the number from last year, and we have had discussions directly with the principal of Bliss Carman, and he feels that there would be no hardship or crowding at all in that area with moving 22 kids over there. Any questions from the council? There's the Bliss Carman catchment area there. And the Fredericton High School catchment area. Sorry. Well, I guess you're not seeing what I'm doing. So I can make all the mistakes I want. Yeah. Okay, so the next area we're moving to is Durham Bridge. So we would be looking at a potential split there, again, at the middle school level. 6 to 8 would involve 21 children, and 9 to 12 would involve 36. The impacted schools would be Stanley Regional High School and Devon Middle School. So I'll go back up here to say that it would move 21 kids from Devon Middle and 36 kids from Leo Hayes, and they would go to the Stanley School. And there, this is a picture of the Stanley catchment area. And David, if you could, can you kind of show the line there, Kim will show you where it is.
Read along here, is it?
For the switch? Down below the Nashwauk Valley School, so.
This is the Nashwauk Valley School right here.
And we can't see that.
You can't see that.
Down in the bottom right-hand corner.
Right there.
Oh, sorry.
That's Nashwauk Valley. So just below that is the bridge that crosses the Nashwauk River. And it would be from there up. So that bottom right-hand corner.
Okay. And I believe the last area we're looking at is the that's the Keswick Valley catchment area there. And that's potentially grade 9 to 12. The school would be Nakawick High School, where we would propose that 69 students that live in the Keswick Valley catchment area would be redirected to Nakawick High School, which would, again, improve their enrollment and reduce the enrollment at Leonidas High School by an additional 59 students. This is currently the Nakawick High School catchment area. Anything to note here, Kim, in this map?
No.
Okay. And this is the Leo Hayes High School catchment area. So that is the report of the committee to study the, we don't need that, David, we already did that motion, to study the catchment areas as outlined in the Simpson Young report in consultation with the district and the schools that are affected.
Any questions on the report? Norma?
What's the total number of students that you're considering to move?
I think it totaled, from the high school, it would total about 165.
And that would vary because we are looking at another year down the road now, but it would be close.
Right.
Okay.
Would that alleviate a number of problems?
I think that would alleviate a lot of the stress school right now, a lot of the physical stress separates. I don't know if any of you have ever been in the O'Hays High School during a classroom break or anything like that, but it's a very tight quarters, if you say. That would be a fair statement. Yeah, so if somebody stopped to tie their shoe in the middle of the road, this might cause a problem.
Yes.
So one of the things we could do is entertain a motion to accept the report.
I would do that.
I have a motion prepared, Mr. Chair. I move that the District Education Council adopt the report and recommendations of the changes in catchment areas as reported by the District Education Council Subcommittee to take effect in the fall of 2017.
I second that.
Can I see that? That the district, so the motion is that the District Education Council adopt the report and recommendations of the changes in catchment area as reported by the district subcommittee to take effect in the fall of 2017. So to clarify your motion, you're saying that we're accepting the report and the recommendations and they would take effect in 2017.
That's correct.
Okay, so that's the motion on the floor. Is there any questions? Just as a council member, you know, it just would be nice to consult the public before we accept the recommendations. That would be my only concern.
Mr. Chair, if I may speak to that, we've had other discussions. We had to present this report, have already the council have at least a look at what we're talking about, and we assumed that the new council would move and meet with the public in the fall of this year, and that there would be not just dump this in, that the superintendent and the council would move forward with the public consultation or at least public input or public meeting, not the input necessarily, but that there would be a continuation of this.
Just a sec, Jane.
Okay.
Okay. going to vacate the chair and let the vice chair, because I would really want to speak on the issue and vote on it.
Take your own chair.
Yeah, keep my hand. And just for protocol, Jane had a hand up.
Yeah, the only other thing that I would like to add is just to relieve some stress in the room about this is that there definitely is room and intent for a grandfathering process. That the kids that are currently, or when this takes place, that are currently in grade 10 at Leonidas High School are not going to be asked to relocate to another school.
So our grade 9 school?
If your student is in grade 9 this year, that's the grandfathering thing, right?
Point of order.
Yes. Yeah.
Can I ask you to direct
your
comments?
So in essence, the intent of this and the intent of the Ernst & Young report was to add the grandfathering clause, which would mean that the students that would be effective would be those that will be going into high school in September of 2017, or going into middle school in September of 2017, or going into elementary school in September of 2017, with exceptions being allowed if they chose to go to the other schools, that would not be an issue.
You know, thanks to the committee for the report. I think it's a good report. I think the recommendations are fine. But to accept recommendations, Madam Chairperson, without talking to one adult, one parent, I have never, in my almost 13 years on the deck, ever made such a change. I wholeheartedly think we should accept the report. I think we should applaud the efforts of the committee. It's nothing against the committee, but I think we are getting ahead of ourselves to accept the recommendations, even if consultation will or may be done, because there's nothing in there that says it must be done, and we know when it's done. I think the intent is there, the good intent is there, but I think we're getting ahead of ourselves to accept the recommendations instead of just accepting the report. I'm totally against the motion as it's worded. I think we should leave it to David and the new deck to do consultation. We can make a motion in late fall after plenty of consultation. It'll give plenty of time for the public for feedback, plenty of time for the deck to move forward. So I'm just against this motion as it is. Thank you.
Question. Miriam, did I see your hand?
No, I was just scratching my
head. May I speak as a seconder again on this? We've met 5 times as a committee. We've gotten staff input 2. This is a difficult committee, and I know there's lots of ramifications of this report. But if we don't accept this report, basically what we're doing is we're tabling it. We were asked as a committee in January to do a job, and we met. February was the snow date. We couldn't meet. March, we'll get into a discussion on this council as to what our mandate was. Well, we thought we were pretty clear in our mandate. So we lost that month. Then we're into April, and now we're into May. So we went back and restudied and looked at it again. If we just simply accept this report and table it, if you just simply say we're going to accept the report, that means nothing. It means we've tabled it. I think we need to adopt the report. Now, I looked up in the dictionary, and I suspected this might happen tonight. And I got my little, I was going to say Funkenwangles, actually it was the Oxford Canadian. To adopt something besides a child, you choose to follow a course of action, etc. Or you take over an idea from someone else. Or you formally approve a recommendation. The gentleman just said, nothing says it must be done. But if you don't present something to be done, there's nothing to talk about. You may as well form another committee next fall and start all over again. Then we're talking about the fall of 2018. If the council coming up and the superintendent, in their wisdom, look at enrollments or tweak this, I would suspect they're probably going to. But if we don't adopt something tonight, we really don't have anything. And so I think we should accept this motion as it is, and let the new council and superintendent carry this on as the word adopt means. I move we take question. I'm calling to question on the motion.
Any further comments? Question?
Question?
Question. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary?
Aye. Okay, correspondence. There's been a correspondence on your portal. I don't think there's anything to bring up under correspondence tonight. Everyone received a copy. Okay. Counselor's final farewell. It was going to be John's last meeting, and he said he will see everyone in June. That can make it to the banquet on June 10th. Okay? That's it. So, time for public comment. If the public would ask you to stand, say your name, and direct your comments to the chair, please.
Chair of the Local Service District of Mayville. I've been asked to come here because my phone's been ringing off the hook since we got this notice that was posted on Facebook for a community member that the CBC told us about it. I'm trying to get it up here, but anyways, doesn't matter, really. It affects 90 of my kids in my community. Most of those kids play football, soccer, sports in Fredericton. Everything they do is in Fredericton. The only ones that do things in Oromocto are my children, because my kids are the first ones on the bus that are picked up from Burton Bridge up. So we have a big issue. Kids on Portobello all go to Fredericton. Our taxes, 95%, go to Fredericton as the LSD. So we have some major issues. I invite any of you guys to come to one of our community meetings, because that's what they want. So we're having a community meeting. I'm not sure who I need to get from this council to come and talk to my community members. They have an issue with their mental health issues when you segregate our kids that have started from kindergarten up, and now all of a sudden all their friends are no more. They're going to be shipped to Oromocto, wherever. There's kids in Leo Hayes that belong to NACWIC. Why are those children not being put back to NACWIC? Why are those kids not being put back to Harvey, where their family address is, instead of using the Fredericton address? So just some of our concerns from the local service district of Mayville.
And doctors, too. I'm in NACWIC, Kedgman. I'm in NACWIC, Kedgman, but my kids would have to take the whole day off for one doctor's appointment.
Just your comment. Do you have email for district office? Because you're welcome to send an email through.
But I will get it.
If you can get it and send it, any communication you can send to the superintendent or the chair or all the dad. So.
Do you have a name?
Yeah, my name's Mark Noel. Yes.
Mark Noel.
Yes, and we help. Yeah. And we'll forward any communication on. Any other questions from the public?
Mark, there's a couple of
them. Sorry, a couple.
Yeah, Mark, I think everybody pretty much knows me, at least Urban and Council. Darren McKenzie from Hanwell. I suppose I should be thankful that Hanwell is at least back on a list of some kind, because it was on a list at some point quite a while ago and was taken off for many years. It's disappointing that after the presentation that... even though I feel that K to 8 school, or at least K to 5, would have been justified, that was instead put off for yet another study. This has been studied in the past. I'm pretty sure that it was Ernst & Young that actually did the first study of it, or the second study of it, at least. And hopefully that will at least expedite this next study again, so that when it goes through, they'll look over their previous information and say, okay, well, the community is a little more dire now, the population's increasing drastically. Maybe we should look at this again, and they'll submit it again and try this all over again next year. So that's just my comments for it. Thank you for putting it on the list. Just disappointed, and I know the community is going to be very disappointed as well to hear that. yet another year is going to go by without us having a school in Hanwha. Thanks.
Question here. Maybe?
Yeah, my name is Jamie McKenzie. I'm from the Durham Bridge area. My wife and I have four boys, two in Leo Hayes, one in Devon Middle, and one in Nashwauk Valley. If I'm understanding correct, the committee or the council has accepted the recommendations from the board. Is that correct?
Yes.
So this is absolutely, with absolutely no consultation with the public whatsoever up until this point. Very little communication of what the results of the report were. I appreciate that a lot of work goes into this. We're not questioning the value of the report that we get from Ernst & Young. I do have a couple of questions that I'd like, although I'm not entirely sure what the sense in posing these questions is right now, but I will ask. The report focuses, the Ernst & Young report focuses on the effective use of available infrastructure. I expected that from Ernst & Young, but I expected something a little bit more from the report to this council and from this council. Has there been any consideration given of the comparability of resources, which is probably our biggest concern? If we were talking about taking our kids from one school and moving to another school with comparable resources, I don't think we'd be quite as concerned as we are right now. As it is, we're looking at having a middle child who is in the English language program, move to a school that has far less resources, far less options, far less opportunity, very limited access to level one courses, very limited access to sport, no band program, nothing. That's what we're being asked to send our middle child to, when our oldest two children have had the benefit of an excellent education and a lot of opportunity at Leo Hayes. And our youngest child, who will now be will be forced to make a choice between a French immersion program and an English language program for the wrong reason. We're now being forced to make a choice between a resource-rich school and a resource-poor school based on choosing a French immersion and an English language program, and that choice should never be forced on us. I can also tell you that there's going to be a lot of other parents in our area that are also going to make the same choice and move their kids in French immersion just in order to preserve the access to education that they've had at Leo Hayes High. That's a fact. So if you're wondering about how effective this change is going to be for the Durham Bridge area, it's going to be absolutely ineffective. You may have a short-term effect of moving some of those kids who are in Devon Middle right now out into Stanley, but it absolutely will not have a long-term effect for the kids that are going to get streamed into French immersion. I'm incredibly disappointed that we would take this step at this point and accept all of these recommendations with absolutely no consultation with the parents and the families that are going to be most affected by this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? And I just want to say, as far as the council, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, we've committed to start consultation in the fall.
So. Can I make one more comment to this as well? I've contacted the superintendent's office. I've had my contact information passed on to you, I believe. No one has ever attempted to get back in touch with me again. So not only are we not opening the conversation up to public consultation, we're actually refusing public consultation.
Public consultation will be started in the fall, for sure, based on the discussion we had.
What's going to be the effect of the public consultation, though? The recommendations have already been accepted. Why are you bothering? That's an announcement, it's not a consultation.
Yeah, no, I think the DEC has made it clear they want to hear from the public. Yeah. And yeah, so, but and bring, and I hope you'll bring your concerns then as well. You know, we invite the public to do that. So, any other public? Okay. Good. So, thank you, everyone. Date of our next meeting is June 16th. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Miriam? All right, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Talk to him in the next meeting in June 2.
We don't have our agenda out. We don't have any plans to. If you want to email, if you want to talk to Carol and she can give you her email, or you and we can send an agenda out. Yep. You can always contact the press. They get a copy. Yeah. Yeah. She'll give you the information. Yep. You know what I forgot to bring up? All that work.
No,
but it's good. We'll bring it up. I'll probably just email it. Well, and you know, I was concerned. I mean, I wanted to speak. I fully support the deck as the chair. You know, if Jordan spoke, I have no problem with that.
I don't know that it was.
No.
Well, I probably know.
Which is the most.
Yes.
What's Carol?
I don't know.
So, Annie.
So, I don't know if you guys know, but with that meeting, Carol, I'm going to find out now.